Well, I'm Anthony Wright, and I'd like to welcome you to Attunement, Life Questing, Where is the Path? And today we are, we have a live telephone interview with author Trebby Johnson. And welcome, Trebby.
Thank you, Anthony. I'm very glad to be here.
And Trebby has written a book called The World is a Waiting Lover. And the subtitle is Desire and a Quest for the Beloved. And when I first got this book, I read about for 10 minutes, and I called up the publicist and thanked them so much for sending me this book for an interview. And what a remarkable book, Trebby. You have an introduction by a foreword by Thomas Moore, and endorsements from Judy Collins and a number of other people. And I must say that when I, as an interviewer, will get books, sometimes I can go through these books pretty quickly. And I tried to do that with your book, and I couldn't do it because it was so wonderfully dense, and it just drew me in. And
thank you.
I really, really appreciate this work. And the title, The World is a Waiting Lover. And you talk about the divine beloved.
Mm-hmm.
And you are also a person who leads vision quests.
Yes.
And this is a part of that work, from what I understand.
Yes.
Can you tell us, and I'd like to also, before we get started, to let our listeners know that I'm going to invite calls in the second half of the hour to 663-8492 if you have questions for Trebby and about this particular topic. Can you tell us what have you discovered about what or who is the beloved?
Well,
there's a global question for you.
Yeah, I've been trying for about 6 years now to answer that question in as short and concise a form as possible, and it continues to challenge me. So I haven't got anything worked out. The beloved, first of all, I would say, is a figure that shows up in myths from all over the world. Africa,
yes.
Persia, Sweden, the Arctic, as a, usually a semi-divine figure. Often it's a god figure who comes and is so, with his or her presence, so alluring, so enchanting, so beautiful, that a mortal human like you or I simply can't resist the call to go and be in the arms of this magnificent lover. Of course, that's impossible. You can't stay in the arms of the lover, the divine lover. And so the role of this force is to be constantly alluring us forth into our passion, into what we love, into those aspects of life that make us greater than we think we can be, to call us into what we love. Mystical poets have addressed God or Allah as the beloved.
Yes.
or Shiva. The beloved is also a figure from psychology, particularly Jungian psychology. If you have a dream that you are being embraced by the most perfect and divine of lovers, and you wake up and you just feel as if something important has happened to you, it probably has, because the Jungians would say that's a symbol that your divided and selves are coming together through this powerful dream. So it's an inner force that I think has been driving all of us all our lives, but we just might not call it the beloved.
Right. Well, and I want to offer to you my very first experience with this was when I was about 4 years old, and I was my parents used to have, I'm from the Minneapolis-St. Paul, Minnesota area, and my parents had a cabin near a river in the what's called the St. Croix River Valley. And I was out in the woods, and I was just wandering around, and it was a time when your parents would just say, all right, go play out in the woods. And I was shocked at one point to be walking down this path, and suddenly the woods, in terms of language I've learned since, took on a real numinosity. And I felt it was a very strange thing, but it stayed with me, that the woods really loved me in a way that was beyond anything that my parents would do, and it would be I really got the message at that moment that the woods would love me all my life. And since that time, I've really appreciated that and revered that, and that's one of the things that led to my study of Taoism and Buddhism, because it spoke about the beauty and the the honesty of nature. But the beloved, I mean, I think in a very archetypal way, I met Diana.
Yeah.
At that moment, you know, the goddess of the woods.
And those kinds of experiences do have a way of staying with you all your life. Mm-hmm. They have a meaning and an endurance that far exceeds just what the obvious experience would be.
Yeah, yeah. So in a way, for a four-year-old, that was sort of a vision quest. But
yeah.
Tell us about how your work with vision quests has led you to the beloved.
Well, it's interesting. At the beginning of the program, you know, when Kay was doing the report on the weather and this one road that there was going to be a mudslide and being careful, I thought, well, this is kind of like a vision quest, because mm-hmm. when you're on a vision quest, you're always attuned to what's going on around you on the outside world, mm-hmm. as well as what's going on the inside. And in a way, we don't often get the opportunity to do that in our normal lives, to be that conscious of the weather as a real force, like a living being.
Right.
The vision quest is—it's called vision quest. That's the name that anthropologists gave to the American Indian tradition, which is still practiced by the Plains tribes, of going out into a sacred spot and fasting for 4 days, and calling for a vision as a way of getting enlightenment about how they can help their people. Mm-hmm. But in fact, people have left their community and gone off into the wilderness to fast and ask for guidance for many millennia, and in all countries. In every conceivable country, this has just been a way that people have found profundity and found enlightenment. And there's a couple from Big Pine, California, down in Southern California, mm-hmm. named Stephen Foster and Meredith Little, who about 30 years ago started to revive, with the help of elders of Native American elders and others, the tradition of the vision quest for people who haven't grown up in that tradition, people like you and me. And they trained many, many people over the years. I studied with them. I studied with another organization in Colorado. And our trips last for 10 days, usually, or 10 days to 2 weeks, although I do a shorter one. And it's a group experience, maybe eight people in the group. And the first few days are all devoted to getting clear on what you need to leave behind and what you really want to do this drastic act for. As one of my teachers said once, this is not a workshop. A vision quest is serious business. You're deliberately leaving behind your community in order to go and be alone in wilderness. And you fast. We drink water in my vision quests. But you fast, you're alone in nature in a spot of your choosing. You just have a tarp for shelter. You don't bring along books or music or other kinds of diversion. You're right there. You're paying attention to nature. You're doing ceremony. You're asking yourself, what really needs to change in my life? What am I really drawn for? What old habit patterns do I need to let go of? And you're paying attention to the birds and the way the sun goes down the mountain and the stars and the inner voices and your dreams, and you're using those for guidance. And so this whole really remarkable dialogue starts happening, and people always are just profoundly transformed as a result of this. Not almost never in the way they think they're going to be, but in just the way that they need to be.
Yeah. Yes, yes. Well, and it's so curious. I mean, there is so much stimulus in the world today about that we can be distracted from this inner knowledge so easily.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's really what the Vision Quest does, I think, is not that I've been on one that's been formally structured like this, but that's what it sounds like that you're inviting people really to do, is to shed their persona, their Western constructed identity.
Absolutely. So just get rid of all the things, and it's not like getting rid of them because they're bad. It's just like, who am I really deep down? If I can be for 3 minutes somebody that's not the parent, not the child, not the conscientious worker, not the community leader, not the artist. Who am I just on my own? What is this? What is the core of me, like this jeweled core? How do I discover that? And it's not like discovering something that you've never seen before. It's just like, as you say, what's down there beneath all the stuff that we think we need to be in the world?
And I wanted to say something that in your book you address something that I've not seen anywhere else in a lot of the literature that is so-called self-help literature, and you have a chapter on an escort to the beloved.
Yeah.
And I have just recently, actually 5 years ago, met someone that I fell deeply in love with, and for 11 weeks it was just heavenly. And then she decided that, she didn't want that, and she stepped away, and I fell into extraordinarily deep and transformative grief where I died. There was no more Anthony that really... Anthony died in the way that Anthony thought Anthony was going to be. I thought I was going to be a PhD clinical psychologist in a suburban community outside of a large city, and obviously the beloved didn't want that. And yet I was stripped away in this vision quest way of any idea about who I thought I was. And tell us about the chapter about escorts to the beloved.
Yeah, well, I've discovered the escorts of the beloved because that's how I got into writing about this whole topic.
Right.
I was guiding a vision quest the year I turned 50, and there was a young man about 15 years younger than I who was there as an apprentice to learn how to do it. We were in the mountains of Colorado, and he had a very powerful dream about me, and then at the end of the quest, he told me he was truly and completely in love with me.
He just laid that right on you.
He did, yes. And, you know, it was at the end of the vision quest, and I was still in my sort of professional mode, and so I just thought, well, that's very nice, and he's projecting, and now I'm going home to my husband and my land and my life. And
right.
Then it wasn't until about 2 days later that it was like a volcano went off in me. It was like, crash, boom, and I said, oh, I'm in love with him, too.
Uh-huh. But and you were married.
Not only was I married, but I was very happily married and still am. I love my marriage. I love my husband. I have a life that I didn't want to change, really. But here was this incredible force, and
you know,
I just didn't want to. I mean, I felt like I couldn't just go off and be with this younger man who I call Lucas in the book, and yet I didn't want to just say, "Oh, it's just a midlife crisis, and I'm just going to turn my back on this because I'm more mature than this."
I think it is so to your credit that you are not trying to cover it up or lie to yourself, or you let it sit there and you looked at it, and so please continue.
Well, I felt like I had to.
You had no choice.
Yeah, I had to, because it was so immense. And I've always been, you know, part of the reason I love being in the wilderness is I love being surprised. And I love being, I love finding out what surprises are all about. And you get that in whenever you go outside. I mean, you can go out in your back garden and you can get surprised. So this was a big surprise. And it wasn't exactly a surprise that I was looking for, but I decided to find out what all this was about. And I started to do something which I was not used to doing in my life, is I started to tell people about what was happening to me. I had all my life been very circumspect and discreet about matters of the heart and about matters of desire.
Oh, we're not supposed to talk about that in this culture.
No, supposed to talk about that, and you're especially not supposed to talk about it if you're already married. You know, this is not done. But I started to talk about it. And to my amazement, people that I'd known for years said things to me like, oh, yeah, that happened to me, too. And they would say, oh, and I had an affair with this person, and it ended disastrously, or I never knew what to do with it, and it felt like it was something bigger. You know, so many people identified with it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was encouraging.
Yes. Well, and I'm hearing that also this is something that may happen to many men who will see a lovely young woman and make that projection, but it's also heartening to me that as a man to hear that it happens to women just as often.
Well,
perhaps.
Yes, and I felt the same way because as equal number of men as women told me that they identified with this story.
Uh-huh.
So I started to think about who is this, who are these people that lead us to this? Because Lucas led me quite inadvertently to this search for what is the divine beloved. That's what I started asking myself. I can't be with him in a real physical sense in the world, but what do I do with this love? Something, it's like, you know, a volcano erupts, to go back to my earlier metaphor, and all this lava pours down the mountain, and it's glowing, and it's hot, and it's burning, and it's steaming, and it transforms the landscape. You can't just go back to being the volcano before the eruption. You know, you have to say, I'm transformed, and so what is it? What's transformed me? What is the heat?
What is this?
Yeah, what's the heat? What's the fire? So it was all started by a young man named Lucas who told me he was in love with me and had a dream about me. So I decided, after working on this for a while, that these are the people who are escorts to the beloved. They come into our lives like the woman that you described, Anthony, and they often don't stay. They leave, they die, they have to go away because it's not their job to stay. Their job is to, like, lead us to a doorway and say, here you are. Are you going to open this door and go through? Are you going to just watch me walk down the hall and say, I've lost something and I'll never get it back?
Right, right. And the courage that it takes to be really mindful, I think, about what is actually going on here, and to really ask yourself the question about, well, who is this person and how did they happen to show up? And what about, and I so appreciate your talking about the escort to that doorway and what happens to us when we go through. And I've been on the other side of the doorway now for about 5 years, and I'm still without a cognitive awareness about who is Anthony supposed to be. I mean, one of the things it's led me to is talking to you on the radio, so I'm deeply appreciative of that.
Well, it's an incredible journey. It's like you don't just find this escort to the beloved and identify him or her. You don't just find the beloved and that's that. You know, it's not like finding something hidden in the ground in your backyard. It's an ongoing journey, because in that original story that I told about, it harks back to a beautiful Hindu story of Krishna, who calls the women out of the villages. And they just drop whatever they're doing. They put the cloth down that they're weaving. They put the spoon in the pot. They walk off and they join Krishna in the hills and they dance with him. And Krishna makes love to each and every one of them. And so enchanting is this splendid moment with the god, that it's as if they're completely alone with him and they're transported to bliss. And they spend the rest of their lives with this longing for another encounter with the divine. But it's not a longing like a craving. It's not a poisonous longing. It's a longing where all of life is enhanced and made bigger and more filled with meaning, because it's all like preparation for the next encounter with the divine. So to get back to your question, there's this sense of, where is going to be my next encounter with the beloved? It could be anywhere.
Well, and for me, I'm so appreciative that the culture has a context for that, so that when the girls go off in the woods, people say, oh, they're going to make love to Krishna. We know what's going to happen. And that context is not available in a Puritan culture.
Yeah.
And so for my sensibility of what you're talking about, I'm looking at the feminine showing up everywhere. I mean, how is the weather in a fierce femininity, and how, for a woman, I think, how is the world a loving and fierce masculinity? You know, but it's such an organic thing.
Yeah, it's looking for those moments of being lost, lost in the most positive way, where you lose track of time because you're so engrossed in what's right in front of you, or finding moments of delight and rapture in nature, even, like, you know, the kind of wild nature that you're experiencing there in the Bay Area at this time, of nature just on its own course, and making streams across the roads and mud sliding down. And there's a strange and dramatic beauty in all of that.
And you have to be full of care so that you don't end up in the ditch and completely derailed and have a lot of reverence for this wild rather than savage power of the beloved, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's also, as Kay was also talking about in her report, it's an incredible opportunity to move out of oneself and to help others and not be engrossed by fear and only protecting oneself, but it's about how can I be greater than I think I can be? Mm-hmm. Is there somebody else who needs my attention right now? Is there something I can do? Is there like an invitation to step out of myself that's calling to me right now that I need to really answer? Because that's the beloved too. It's mm-hmm. not only in romance and quiet, private, erotic moments. It's in service in a way that you and only you can give it to the world.
Mm-hmm. I'm Anthony Wright, and I'm your host today on Attunement, Life Questing. And my guest is Trebi Johnson, and she has written a book called The World is a Waiting Lover. And I'd like to invite our listeners to call in after the break at 663-8492 if you would like to talk with Trebi about your experiences with the divine, or if you have questions about escorts to the beloved, or just general comments about what the beloved is or vision questing. So stay tuned, and we're going to be right back, and I'll come back with in the break with a few comments about what's happening with the roads. So stay tuned, and we'll be right back. You're listening to KWMR Community Radio for West Marin at 90.5 FM, Point Reyes Station, 89.3 FM in Bolinas, and streaming live over the World Wide Web at www.kwmr.org. Programming on KWMR is brought to you by the Palace Market, family-owned and operated in downtown Point Reyes Station, offering produce, cheeses, and wines, as well as a full deli and meat department. The Palace Market now carries an assortment of natural health foods and supplements. And also, it's after 11, so the Bolinas gas station is no longer offering gas. The road update, please dial 511, because that's a great number to call to get updated information about open roads. And here's what we know, still closed. The Marshall Petaluma Road is still closed. The crews are working on it. Fairfax Bolinas Road is still closed. Limantour Road is damaged to the road, but there's a temporary closure. The Panoramic Highway is still closed. And in Inverness Park, there is a burgeoning or pending mudslide on Portola Avenue, so please use Balboa. It's still unstable, still unsafe, and the county engineers have said it's rather a matter of when it's going to go, not if. And they have chainsawed off some of the trees, the larger trees, but there is a spring that is filling up with water behind the root ball, so it's very important to not use Portola Avenue, to use Balboa Avenue, because the vibrations from your vehicles, it's possible to trigger the slide from the vibrations from cars driving by. Also, please drive slowly and carefully on all West Marin roads. In Inverness Park, the creek is still running over the road, and there are still a lot of places on Sir Francis Drake where it's just a one-lane traffic because of water on the road, and people are driving way too fast. So please do slow down and be attentive to what's going on, even though you might not see anything or expect something. There are some work crews who are working without signs or traffic direction. So be prepared and drive slowly and safely. So we'll be right back with more on Attunement. Stay tuned. I'm Anthony Wright, and I'm your host today on Attunement, Life Quest, and we have on our on a live telephone interview our guest, an author, Trebi Johnson, And welcome back, Trudy.
Thank you.
And we're talking about your book called The World is a Waiting Lover. And the subtitle is Desire and the Quest for the Beloved. And one of the people who I was so glad that you mentioned in the book was an author named Nancy Qualls Corbett.
Oh, yeah, she's
and
great.
I came across this book about 3 or 4 years ago called The Sacred Prostitute, because I feel as a man, in order to be a well-informed human person, I need to study female gender culture. So I'll never know what it's like to be a woman, but it's you guys are so fascinating.
Yeah, ditto.
Yeah, and so Nancy Qualls Corbett really goes into some of the sacred femininity in a cultural sense. Can you talk about Nancy Qualls Corbett and the Sacred Prostitute?
Yes, it really. This is one of my favorite books, and she's such a good writer too. And she's a Jungian psychiatrist who lives in Birmingham, Alabama. And in her book, she talks about the figure of the sacred prostitute, who was a real historical figure, who would serve the goddess in the temples in the Middle East by making love with strangers in the temple as a way of initiating them into the mysteries of the goddess, and through sensuality and sexuality and just an opening of the senses. And so what Nancy does in her book is, after really exploring this story in a historical sense, she talks about how men and women can use the story of the sacred prostitute to enhance their own lives. For men, for example, she talks about how to enhance your intuition, to have more of a sense of play, to be more in touch with your emotions, to be more spontaneous. And for women, it has to do with just being more trusting your relationship to your own sensuality and not trying to hide it, and exploring different ways in order to be alive and sensuous and attuned to the world. And it's just really a remarkable book.
So it seems, and this does this also go along with the culture of Vesta and the Vestal Virgins?
I'm not sure. It probably does, but I'm not actually sure.
Because I recall that archetypally, Vesta was the goddess and the guardian of the hearth fire.
Yeah, and she did have caretakers of the temple. Now, whether they were part of the, you know, whether they did more than, I know that the Vestal Virgins tended the flame, but whether they tended the inner flame or not, I'm not quite sure.
Well, what I had understood was that when the soldiers would come back from their most difficult military campaigns, they would come back and make love to the Vestal Virgins and be cleansed of all the horrors of war, and then be able to return to society as healed persons.
Wow, but, I like that story.
But one of the other things to me that's so interesting about Vesta is that the Latin word for hearth is focus.
Oh.
And
that
it's really a point of how we choose to focus. And in a way, that's one of the things that it seems that the escort to the beloved brings us to, the opportunity to focus on the portal that we are in the world, whether it's a masculine or feminine polarity, and how we then choose to be making love to the world is what you're saying, actually.
Yeah, exactly.
So
It's finding Eros in life,
mm-hmm.
and not just through relationship with a partner, although that, of course, is an important part of it, but in everything, in the trying times, the times of crisis, the times of fear, times of creativity, times of delight, just like Eros is one of those gods who never died. Mm-hmm. Because we couldn't afford to let him die. He's too important. We need Eros in our life. We need that spark, that kinetic pathway lighting us towards what is calling us in the world, and that's Eros.
Mm-hmm. And I'm going to venture out of some dangerous territory here and talk about pornography and what the draw for men is of pornography. Men are primarily visual, but I think in our culture currently, there is not a lot of permission for the overt erotic, and particularly with some of the most unfortunate polarization and fear generated about gay marriage, for example. Mm-hmm. I think it's so curious that there is such a container about that, about and I'm one of the things that also, just as a sidebar, I was thinking about people of the more fundamentalist persuasion of many spiritual paths fear love in a strange way, and they love fear. Do you have a comment about that, about those who fear love and those who love fear?
Well, I wouldn't necessarily ascribe it to fundamentalists. I mean, I don't.
Well, thank you.
That's not that I know great many fundamentalists, but I just wouldn't limit it to them.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly, there are people who fear following the beloved, who fear following allurement.
Well, because what would happen? We might go crazy and be sensual.
Yeah, you might go crazy. You might fly away from your marriage and start having improper relationships with improper people in improper ways, and
mm-hmm.
you might throw away all your responsibility and max out on your credit cards, and you might never come back. But I certainly, what you say about, you know, what you said about fundamentalist religion is it one of the things that we do experience in our culture with a great many religions is a distrust of the feminine and a distrust of sexuality.
And the erotic, yeah.
And the erotic, yeah. And it's almost taken for granted that what's spiritual and what's sexual are two different opposite poles, and that the sensual and the sexual is very... It's to be forbidden. It's to be ignored.
It's so puzzling.
And it's inappropriate.
It's so puzzling because really only through letting go of oneself, I think, is the beloved and the divine possible,
mm-hmm.
and unity with that.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a couple of points here, too, that I'd like to talk about. The first one is the commitment, the idea of commitment to the beloved before the human partner. And I'm a practitioner of the I Ching, and one of the hexagrams talked about that one has to be committed to the beloved, to spirit, before one's partner. Because only with that commitment to the beloved is it possible to be loving with one's partner. If you commit to the partner first and say, no, the beloved or the divine is second, that never works, because
right.
then you'll be escorted right back to the divine again.
Uh-huh. Yes, and the divine beloved is, first of all, it's constant in your life. You know, the human partner, no matter how close you are, no matter how intimate a relationship you have, that person could get sick and die, mm-hmm. could leave you, and at the very best is going to be distracted because your partner...
they're human.
Exactly, and their job is to follow their own beloved. It's not to have mm-hmm. you be the center of their life, just as your job isn't to have them be the center of your life.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as you are following the divine beloved, you are in touch with your own sort of, like I said earlier, your own core, your own larger self, your own most radiant self,
mm-hmm.
and then you are able to. One of the things that I discovered through my pursuit of this concept, this archetype, is that when I got more in touch with the divine beloved and the inner beloved, there were certain things that I stopped demanding that my own husband give me, like affirmation for all of my ideas and all my projects.
Fascinating.
And every statement that I wanted to make, I didn't need his approval and his enthusiasm for everything, because it was like I had an inner source of that. And I think that's not uncommon. If we start cultivating in ourselves a relationship with the divine and the divine within ourselves and the divine in however we see it, whether it's through something that we call God or the earth or service or the integrated human, whatever we call it, when we develop an ongoing relationship with that, we gain a strength and a courage and a joy that makes us less dependent on other people to provide those things for us.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And it's a real clarity, because one has found it for oneself.
Yeah. And it's constant. You know, the divine yeah. beloved is not going to leave you.
Well, and I've actually really come to have found that, but I'm still kind of wandering around. And another point that I wanted to ask you about was the Beloved's desire for us.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, talk about that, please.
Well, I find that a very mysterious force, and it's kind of like one of those things, like sometimes I really get it and other times I completely lose it.
Mm-hmm.
But first of all, just to think about allurement. Allurement, we're all allured to things all our lives. When we're little kids, certain games and pastimes fascinate us, whereas others don't.
Right.
We somehow find best friends when we're 3 years old, mm-hmm. among a whole class of people in nursery school. You know, we find lovers. There are places we love. There are subjects in school that really excite us and others that leave us cold. We choose our work in life. This is allurement, and I now see that as the call of the Beloved. And it's really quite a mysterious and wonderful thing when you think about it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, why do we choose one thing over another?
Right.
Who knows? You can have all the sorts of genetic, biographical reasons lined up in a row, but that still doesn't explain why some things really just turn us on and
mm-hmm.
others don't.
Mm-hmm.
And so this force is always calling to us, and if we start following it and saying, what is it that's leading us here? It's like if that is the Beloved. And so I'm following a sort of roundabout route here.
Sure.
But by doing that, we become the person that the Beloved loves. By answering that call, we step into, it's like there are calls all over the world and in all
right.
aspects of our life that we could perhaps be more engaged with. And by
mm-hmm.
following those, we are following the Beloved and becoming more of ourselves, becoming more what the Beloved loves. Because one of the things that I've learned over the course of doing this work, and I do a lot of workshops in which I take up some of the themes of my book and people experience them within the course of a weekend usually,
mm-hmm.
Is that people have the experience that the Beloved has been a part of them all their lives, and they're only sort of just now discovering it. And so they say, oh, the Beloved has always loved me and accepted me, and I see that the Beloved also has like a sense of who I am at my most generous, my most creative, my most divine self.
Mm-hmm. So, and the next word that comes to mind, you talk about ripeness, about being ripe for engagement with the Beloved.
Yeah.
And that's a real readiness to let go to that.
Mm-hmm. At any time. At any time.
Mm-hmm. I've been experiencing something recently that I wanted to talk with you about, and several other people that I've talked to about this have been experiencing similar dimensions. I have a skill, and there are other people who I know who have skills, and we're just not being called on. And it seems like there's a sort of silence from the universe that I'm saying, okay, I'm ready. I've got this skill that I can practice. I'd like to do it, but it's not happening.
Mm-hmm.
And what about this silence? And from what I'm hearing you say, it's really time to allow that silence. People have been telling me, stop thinking, Anthony. Stop, you know, trying to make sense out of it. Go and hang out with your right brain. And the right brain is completely atemporal. It's completely imagic. In a way, it's a magical thinking. And there's going to be information that comes that isn't available in a cognitive way. Do you have a comment about the silence like this and what we can find in that silence?
So, but by silence, you mean this kind of like the world's silence. Other people just aren't inviting you to come forth and use this skill.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Or to perform. I suppose if I were to offer my skill for less money, I would have more people taking me up on it. But you know, that's not what I've devoted my life to practicing. And there are other practitioners who are doing quite well with this particular skill. And I'm going, well, wait a minute, why? And my friend that I spoke to yesterday is in the same position. They say, Well, we're getting work, but it's being offered to us at about half of what we normally charge, and we're much more skilled than that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's always a problem. But I guess, I mean, it is. It's because the world doesn't necessarily want what we love. But I think what's really important is, I mean, you know, there's a certain saying out there that if you do what you love, the money will follow.
Right.
Well, I haven't necessarily found that to be true in my life.
Well.
And yet, I do think it's more important to be finding ways to practice doing what you love in whatever way you can.
Right.
As much as you can.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for instance, I knew since I was a little kid that I wanted to be a writer, and I thought I was going to have my first book of poems out by the time I was 24. Well, it's taken 57 years before my first book came out.
Mm-hmm.
And believe me, there were times when I was mightily discouraged about this and went off storming into the woods, weeping and crying because a book was turned down, and just threatening I might as well give up and do something useful.
Well, I felt like that, you know?
Yeah, it's very frustrating. But I didn't give up because I couldn't give up. And so finally the right subject and the right writing and the right words and the right publisher came along, and it all finally started to happen.
And, oh my God, what a book it is.
Thank you.
I really so much appreciate it. I'm Anthony Wright, and I'm your host today on Attunement Life Questing, and we're talking with author Trebby Johnson, and The World is a Waiting Lover is her book, and the subtitle is Desire and Quest for the Beloved. So the muse finally showed up for you.
Yes, she did. Yes, she did. Through this incredible subject, which just seized hold of me and wouldn't let go.
And there's an image that comes to mind where this man who said, I'm utterly and completely in love with you, and I had a dream about that you went up to this cave, and I'm seeing you climb up this quite tall and dangerous trek to get to this cave. Can you tell us about what you found in that cave from the dream?
Well, this was an actual physical cave on the top of an actual physical mountain.
Mm-hmm.
And Lucas had a dream that I was singing him up there. And he actually made the journey up there to the cave. And I went up the following year because I felt like I needed to trace this path in the real life form. And
you were going to do it.
Yeah, I wanted to do it. I felt like I had to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was quite a treacherous route. It was grassy at first, and then there were all kinds of boulders that had rolled down from the mountain into the grass, and then it was just pure stone that you had to climb over stone, and the stones were slippery, and it was damp, and it was quite hazardous. And at the top of this mountain was a little cave, and there were beautiful columbine, like a huge clump of columbine right outside the front. There was moss on the inside. The walls were silvery with moisture dripping down. It was so fragrant. I can still just remember the fragrance. And I just threw myself on the earth there and breathed in the fragrance and let the moisture from the ceiling drip down on my face. And it was just like, it was one of those encounters with the beloved. You know, it was just a moment of having done something strenuous and difficult and being welcomed in this extraordinary place that almost nobody in the world has ever been to.
Wow. And I have a visceral feeling of being there with you, and I thank you for that. And it's really these kinds of these times that stay, it seems that stayed with you, that it's very present for you.
Oh, yes. Yeah, it was, as all of those transcendent moments are, you know, like the one that you described about being a little child and feeling that the woods love you. Those moments are, those are the moments that I call in my book The Embrace of the Beloved, and they stay with you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. One of the other things that I've made a note about, this, and staying with that, it makes the soul resonance sing. And one of the things that I do is I'm a piano technician, and I tune pianos, and I am really aware of what these individuals have taught me. And they have a deep resonance that when they're attuned just right, and that's the title of my show, and part of what my quest is to understand what real attunement is about. Can you comment about, talk to us about making the soul resonance sing with knowing the beloved?
It's a lovely phrase. Well, it has to do with knowing that there is something inside of ourselves that is following allurement, that knows how to express its own joy, and through doing that loses fear and timidity. I think so many of us, and myself included for many, many years, felt like the world is not a lover. I think that's part of the reason I had to call this book that, because for so many years I didn't feel like that.
Well, that's a very Puritan idea that we're, you know, it's us against the world, and the world is this thing, or it's a, you know, a machine, and we have to, you know, it's manifest destiny. We have to conquer the world. And wait a minute, you know, and the world's always going to be more powerful than us.
Yes, and yet the world is not necessarily a hostile place. Especially the immediate world that we're in. It's not like you're going to just get on a plane and go to Baghdad and wander around expecting people to embrace you. You know, you have to bring some sense into this. But the world, my immediate world, if I let go of what's holding me back and what's making me feel like I'm small, I'm not ready, I'm not prepared, other people have more training, other people have more of a right, you know, there's that sense, other people have more of a right to have what they want. And by following the beloved constantly, not just once or twice, but as a sort of a practice, by following what we love, by taking the invitations to serve other people when it's called for in our own special way and not in a martyr kind of way, then we actually do discover that the world is not a fearsome place. The world is glad to see me. I have a place in the world. I can reach out to other people and find connections there. I can find joy in all kinds of things.
And it's with every breath.
Yeah.
My goodness.
It really is with every breath. It's in all kinds of... It's in traffic jams. It's in slowing down for the mudslides.
And not having to go where you think you need to go.
Yeah, because taking a detour and you might discover something wonderful.
Well, and part of how I came to be actually in Inverness was by making a stop that I, you know, didn't think I was going to make. And can you talk to us about remaining evergreen?
Oh yeah, in a relationship?
Sure.
That's the way I was speaking about it in my book, because I had read a quote by Emerson that said marriages tend to get deciduous, which is sort of mean, you know, that the leaves fall off.
Right.
And what my husband and I have discovered, that you can keep it evergreen, but by each of you following your own beloved and knowing that the other person has a calling that is theirs alone to follow, and then you come together and you share your delight in your own individual love of your own pursuits. And and when you live a life sort of like that, where you're in love with what you do, and we can't always be in a situation of being in love with what we do, but I think we can always be in a situation of trying to find a way to love what we do, or finding other things in life that we can love, even if we can't love our job or love our current situation. Just like finding where the love is and going and grabbing it. I mean, I think that's a duty as a human, to grab love wherever you can.
Right. You know, before we came on the air, and we're running short on time a bit, I'd like you to read the last two paragraphs on page 240 of your book.
Yes.
And I think it really is a lovely way to finish up our hour. So I'm Anthony Wright, and I've been your host today on Attunement, What is the Life Questing, What is the Path? And we're speaking with Trebi Johnson, and she has a book called The World is a Waiting Lover, Desire and Quest for the Beloved, and it's published by New World Library. So please read from that part.
This story contains all the vital elements of the journey to the beloved. This refers to a story that I've just told, by the way, a Jewish story. The lust at first concentrated on a human being and later converted to soulful yearning. The willingness, even in those early stages, to change one's life completely for the sake of the beloved. The expansion of the heart to include other people in the divine. the realization that questions of life and love and beauty and how these exalted concepts touch the reality of death and sorrow are the universal forces that bind people together. And the magnification of the soul, not by force of will, but through love, and always the memory of where it all began. What along this journey is not divine? The imponderable nature of the universe and the wonder of our own miraculous and souled bodies falling in love, witnessing acts of compassion and bravery, and on occasion enacting them ourselves, make us the moth that seeks the flame. The imponderable cannot be known, but it can and must be pondered. And so we do as the moth does. We buzz around that curious, enchanting flame, exploring it, daring ourselves to dance closer and closer to the light we cannot live without, until, finally, unable to control ourselves any longer, we dive into the flame and lovingly lose ourselves. In touching others, we are transformed. In transforming ourselves, we touch others. Loving the beloved, we become the beloved. We realize how big love can be.
Oh, thank you so much for reading that. That really says a lot about what your book is.
Thank you.
And thank you so much for being with us. And I'd like to let our listeners know that Tarvi Johnson will be at Open Secret in San Rafael on Valentine's Day. So please stop by and see her. And do you have contact information, Tarvi?
Yes. I have a website. It's www.visionarrow.com. Mm-hmm. And I'm also going to be doing one of my beloved workshops in Freestone at the Freestone Retreat Center on February 17th to 19th.
Okay, and the information's on that website.
Yes.
All right. Thank you so much, Trebi, and we'll be in touch. And I'll be doing another interview with you at Open Secret, but this time it will be live.
Yes. So thank you so much, Anthony.
You're most welcome.
Bye.
Bye-bye. And I'm Anthony Wright, and I'm your host today on Attunement, What is the Quest? Life Questing, What is the Path? And we've been talking with Trebi Johnson, and she has written a book called The World is a Waiting Lover, and it's The Desire and Quest for the Beloved. And coming up next is New Dimensions. Stay tuned. You're listening to KWMR at 90.5 FM Point Reyes Station, 89.3 FM Bolinas, and streaming live on the World Wide Web at www.kwmr.org. Also,